the bi-weekly live call-in television program dedicated to overthrowing the fascist state in which we live. Tonight's the second part of a two-part program on participatory economics, or Pericon for short. My name is John, and to my left here is Matthew. I guess we'll start with a little review. If you didn't watch our last show, or if you did, you need a little reminder of what we went over. We decided to kind of give a global overview of the struggles that we all face, at least conscious people face. The four spheres of struggle being kinship, community, economics, and politics. And we defined economy as a set of institutions which handles production, allocation, and consumption of stuff. Talked a little bit about classes, Marx's class theory, and more recent expanded class theories. And then we tried to talk about the values that hopefully all moral humans could share as we try to build an economy. Those values, and maybe we could show them on the screen, were equity, solidarity, diversity, and self-management. Anything you'd like to add about last week's show?
Well, we didn't really get to the bread and butter. You know, we didn't get to the real point. And we had some calls that, you know, wanted us to get to the point of what exactly Pericon is and so forth. So we want to do that the best we can tonight. Mainly, we're talking about workers' councils. We're talking about consumers' councils as well. Some kind of a facilitation board in between that manages the information back and forth. There's a few things about workers' councils I wanted to get to. For one thing, they exist already. And we have some examples we'll get to in a while. But they already exist, and you know, there's no reason why they can't be formed in workplaces already. So they can be formed within existing workplaces or as the structure of new ones, such as co-ops. So the workers' councils have to address these questions of structure, and they include one of the main parts of a worker council is a balanced job complex. And we've discussed earlier about what exactly a balanced job complex is. Basically, in any kind of job, there's a set of tasks that you do, right? Mm-hmm. And they're supposed to, you know, correlate with one another, you know, and usually in a job description type of format. But they're not balanced. The different job complexes and different jobs in the same workplace aren't balanced. There's some tasks that are more onerous, more tedious, you know, require more, physical toil than others, and others are more empowering. They're closer to the information regarding what is produced, how it's produced, how the workplace is doing, you know, mm-hmm. as far as output.
So don't you think that the way that jobs are currently defined, the tasks are allotted, is the way, you know, nature intended? You know, some people are kind of built to do crappy jobs, and other people are built to do less crappy jobs, maybe brain work.
You know? Yeah, somewhat. And it's good to be able to have the freedom to, you know, do a type of job, have a set of tasks that relate to your skills, of course, and maybe some talents in there. But the problem is now is that, you know, that doesn't happen very often. You know, people sort of get stuck for a lifetime and disempowering job.
Mm-hmm. I guess how would this how do you see this working? I mean, we have workers' councils that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
We have and they have balanced job complexes. I guess they get to define what those job complexes are, and then we have consumers' councils. In last show, we already ruled out that markets won't work as an allocation scheme.
Mm-hmm.
How exactly will that work, do you see?
Well, there's the facilitation board, right, which is a basically an information processing network for the consumers' councils and for the workers' councils. And of course, everybody would be, I mean, all workers would be on a workers' council, and everybody's a consumer, so they would be part of or have access to a consumer council. And then there would be this other intermediate institution that would, you know, process the information through back and forth. Then there would be indicative pricing as well, where there would be a series of rounds of negotiations back and forth. Like the consumers' councils would make proposals, requests for what they want to consume, you know, either individually or as a group, a family, a neighborhood, you know. And then it would go back and forth a few times until there's an agreement made. And the prices would reflect the true cost of, you know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like now with the, you know, there's, you know, things that are polluting or whatever when they're produced, that's not factored into the cost. You know, I mean, we hear all the time about, you know, the economy's doing great or the economy's not so good or whatever, but it's not bringing into account like environmental factors for one. You know, mm-hmm. the impacts of, say, a factory has, you know, nuclear waste or whatever, and then that ends up costing society in the long run to clean it up or with cancer or whatever, and money gets sucked into that and it's never reflected in the cost. So Paracon would have indicative prices like that.
All right.
And another thing too, it has to be direct democracy. Paracon would naturally be grassroots. And that's empowering, you know. It just naturally is when a person is, as a worker, is part of make the decision making, you know. It's naturally empowering, and it has to have cooperation, which goes to the solidarity value to work. And the more cooperation there is, the more it'll work, instead of, you know, a market system that's based on competition, which, you know, doesn't work for these values that we mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what? One more thing too is that it's not just, you know, single workers' councils, but it would really work to have federations between councils too. Either like within one industry or within, you know, just councils that can work together. And there can even be multiple federations, like one workplace could, you know, be part of different federations.
So I guess to clarify a little bit of what a consumer council means, because people aren't, I'm certainly haven't ever been a member of a consumer council,
mm-hmm.
In a Paracon system at least. But there are some models that try to deal with the type of information. One would be Consumer Reports,
mm-hmm.
or Ralph Nader's organizations that are consumer based, and they can generally deal with the information that a consumer council might have, but the consumer councils in a Paracon are kind of a nested. They could be they can form federations also, but they're also a nested structure, so that you have a neighborhood consumer council, and then maybe a city consumer council nested inside of a regional consumer council, like that, and so that there is a needs on every level that get taken into account and influence the decisions that are made further down. So if you know that a your neighborhood consumer council is planning on purchasing, and everyone in it has agreed to purchase some transportation option, then you don't have to purchase a private transportation option that duplicates that. And that works for, like, with healthcare or parks or the environment, environmental concerns.
Yeah, it would really create more options closer to what people really want, rather than, you know, like in a market, you know, you kind of just have to take what's marketed to us. You know, when you go in the store, I mean, you can, yeah, you can vote with your dollars or whatever by making choices between this or that, but, you know, as far as getting something different, you know, in the store or whatever, you know, there's no institution to do that. So that's what the Consumers Council would do.
I guess there's one thing that that we mentioned was the balanced job complexes. And do you think that's a good thing to go into that right now, to a little more detail, or is there something more general you wanted to talk about?
I don't know. Well, I just want to get to the. We want to talk about balanced job complexes, and also we want to touch on the compensation on effort and sacrifice. I mean, that's part of the Workers' Council too. I mean, the rewards.
All right. Yeah.
But we can start with a balanced job complex dynamics, and then go into, you know, how people get paid in this system, and how they would, you know, have, how they would get compensated to participate in the economy. Where can we start with balanced job complex?
Well, as you mentioned, a job is really a collection of tasks. Every job that I've ever had, there were things that I was expected to do and things that I was told not to touch because somebody else was doing them, and I'd, you know, possibly screw it up, or it would take power away from someone else who they thought deserved to have those decision-making powers. A balanced job complex is an attempt by a workers' council to divide up those tasks in a way that, when everybody on the council looks at each other, they say, well, you're working, you have these tasks that are unpleasant, and you have these tasks that are good, and I have these tasks that are unpleasant, and I have these tasks that are good. And on the whole, we agree that they're equal as far as their pleasantness. And even beyond that, that they're balanced for decision-making power. So a big problem with workers' councils and unions as they exist right now is that even if they're based on democratic principles of one person, one vote, certain people have monopolies of information through their job. They're dealing with the numbers, the hours, the flow of products into and out of the factory, say it's a factory. And so when it comes time for the full, group to get together and make a decision, they have to defer to these people who have this information. And those people tend to make decisions, put forward propositions, which will favor their own position. That's a natural human tendency. If you have some information, you'll use it to further your own self-interest. We are all familiar with that, and there's no reason to think that that will change, but there's a way to get around that problem by balancing the job so that everybody has the information necessary mm-hmm. to make good decisions when it comes to voting democratically in the work council.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it touches on the equity value that, you know, when the job complexes are balanced, there's a less of a discrepancy in pay, you know. So people would, you know, be doing different jobs, but they would be balanced in such a way that they'd both be having essentially the same effort and sacrifice there, so people would get paid the same, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, I mean, it's like a big hierarchy. And yeah, the folks with the access to the information of what's produced, how it's produced, are in a position of power, and they're rewarded for that. What comes to mind is I used to work in a factory, and there would be these spontaneous, you know, meetings, right? And I'm sure, you know, listeners or viewers out there, you know, in their jobs, they have to go to employee meetings or whatever, mandatory after work or whatever. Well, they were just a joke at this factory I worked at because, you know, everyone would shuffle in all tired from work and, you know, 12-hour shift, and they just blasted us with, you know, some manager would just blast us with all these charts and graphs, you know, of how much was produced, the year-to-date totals, and all this math stuff. And we just have to listen, you know, and just have to, you know, nod our heads and be like, you know, yes, we'll work faster, we'll work more, you know, and mm-hmm. like, you know, we're not meeting production or whatever. But the funny thing is that every single person in there, you know, had some issues, you know, some things that, some grievances, and there was never, like, any space for that. Like, at the end, they would have a little short, like, question and answer time, you know. But it was like nobody wanted to bring up anything because it was just like them, you know, challenging the people with the information.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, nothing ever got changed, and it just got worse and worse and worse, you know. Or it's kind of stagnated anyway.
Yeah. From my own work experience, I know that I agree with how meetings usually went. And that's, I guess, a valid complaint about this vision of, oh my gosh, there's going to be so many meetings that people will just go into overload, you know, mm-hmm. that they have to make all these decisions about everything. But I think a lot of that, from my experience, comes from the fact that the decisions that I've ever been presented on the job were about things that I really could care less about, like what color is the water cooler going to be? You know, they never said, well, how long are we all going to work this week? You know, mm-hmm. and I think anybody on a job would love to be involved in that decision, but if you're just making decisions about these little twiddly things that really don't affect your life that much, and that's the extent, then yes, it seems like a big waste of time. Why even get together in this democratic system of councils
mm-hmm.
And listen to everybody talk about what color the water cooler should be?
But on the same token, though, the little things make a big difference to the workers sometimes that get totally glossed over by, you know, people that have the power. Like in my factory, you know, for years, you know, people talked about and asked the management and stuff for an awning outside the factory so people could smoke cigarettes underneath it when it was like raining and snowing. And it never happened, you know. It mm-hmm. never did. And people brought it up all the time. And it probably only would have cost the company like, you know, $100 or something to put one up. And it just, you know, it wasn't important to them. So,
yeah. So back to the balanced job complexes. The idea is to balance both for the physical labor that people put in, and for the mental empowerment to make good decisions. We've already mentioned the fact that people are paid or rewarded. They have. Their consumption is limited by how much effort and sacrifice they put out
into the economy.
So if we're balancing for, you and I are in a workplace and we balance for how much our tasks are onerous and debilitating and uplifting, then, and we combine that with that we get paid for that, we should end up with the same pay.
Mm-hmm.
And and that goes right to the equity mm-hmm. value that we've mentioned.
Yep, and it would be different for every workplace, too. It's important to keep in mind that in every workplace, the council would have to make their own sort of way to measure the effort and sacrifice, too. I mean, it's not just a set-in-stone thing all across the board. So, I mean, that's just another point.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they're the balanced job complex. What else do we have to say about it?
Nothing right now. We were planning on having a roll-in on.
Okay, yeah, we're gonna go uncommercial.
A little uncommercial from our non-sponsors.
A word from our corporate sponsor. Yeah.
Welcome back. You're the product. Not for this show, though. Hopefully you get to determine how the rest of the show goes by your phone calls. We're going to open the phones right now. The phone number is 459-4881. And you can call us in and hopefully get us to clarify some of the ideas that we're talking about participatory economics. I thought right now that maybe a good thing would be to give maybe an example of how the iteration process works to how consumers' wants and needs and desires match up with what workers want to produce mm-hmm. through the facilitation board that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So say I'm a consumer and I look at my last year's budget, and we'll just go with a yearly planning cycle. It's not necessary that it be on a yearly cycle, but just for simplicity, I think people could budget on a yearly basis generally. I look at last year's consumption and how much I worked, and I know that how much I'm... Wow, we got a phone call already. Well, yeah, do you want to go to the phone call before we do this
thing?
Yeah, okay.
Sure.
Jen.
Ken, how you doing?
Hi. Can you give us a question or comment on participatory economics?
Yeah, I wonder if this workers' council will have is this a free enterprise type of system, or is this no?
No.
Oh, what type of system is it going to be then?
Well, it's called participatory economics.
I never heard that expression.
Yeah, that's why we're bringing it to you, so that you can...
type of a socialist system?
Not exactly, no.
No? What type of system is it, then?
It's a system where people negotiate what the outcomes of the economy should be.
The outcomes
A system
economy.
That tries to escape from the dictates of capitalists and socialist planners and... hierarchies of all sorts.
So the workers' council, now they'd be working in a... Are these factories privately owned, or are they owned by society?
No, they would be owned by the council, collectively owned. An example of some that already exist now are like co-ops, like food co-ops. There's some farm co-ops out there. There's printing, like printing houses. Some of those are co-ops. So they're collectively owned by the members and the workers, you know, that do the work, and they also consume the goods too.
So are the goods sold?
Yeah.
For profit?
Well, but the profit is shared amongst all of the people in the co-op.
Yeah,
so in other words, the co-ops can create wealth.
They do create wealth. I don't think they create profits, though.
There's going to be money in the whole system. That's a type of capitalist system, then.
No, that's not necessarily true.
Yes,
it is. I mean, the Soviet Union had money, and it wasn't a capitalist system.
Well, that was a communist system.
Right, and we don't want that either, so...
No.
And right. Whether it has money or not is just a matter of convenience, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, not necessarily. If there's a cooperative in a factory that's creating some sort of wealth off of it, I can't see how they can't be creating wealth if the goods are bought and sold to other people and in society.
Well, I'm just trying to make the distinction between creating wealth, which Perry Con does, and it distributes wealth, and taking of profits. The taking of profits is done by capitalists. And,
yeah, but why even use money and why even sell the goods?
Well, and Perricon wouldn't necessarily have to use money per se. I mean, I agree that money is really a tool and it makes it very easy to hoard wealth. You know, it's a symbol for wealth, but it can easily accumulate it, right?
Yeah.
So Perricon wouldn't have to necessarily use money. It's sort of up to, it goes through a facilitation board and a number of back and forth negotiations to get both sides to eventually agree on, you know, what is produced, what is, you know, wanted by the consumers,
you,
and then an indicative price.
Question? What's you guys that? Ever read Karl Marx's book on Communist Manifesto?
Have I ever read it?
It doesn't really apply to our program.
Have you ever studied socialism?
Yeah, somewhat.
Somewhat.
Well, actually, what you guys are speaking of is a true socialist system, which is pretty much close to what I believe in, and it's just worded and changed around a little bit. And, you know, my father's been in socialism for years, so I can tell the difference.
I think you might find some fundamental differences if you look into it more. We're going to give a bunch of resources towards the end of the show, and some books, and there's a website and stuff too. There's a lot of things out there about Perricon, yeah, and a lot of articles about it. So, but thanks for your call. Yeah. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye bye. Yeah, I think generally people who have some degree of familiarity with Marx and socialism have because they have a critique of capitalism, mm-hmm, they're able to grasp and see that there are similarities between Perry Con and socialism. But I think there are some fundamental differences too, especially
sure,
about the central planning. Generally, socialism relies on central planning, mm-hmm, and Perry Con doesn't.
Mm-hmm. And also that we have to remember that when we're talking about Perricon, it's an economic system and it's not a political system.
Right.
And that's a lot of the trouble that we get into today, and a lot of the confusion, and why there's, you know, a lot of exploitation and, you know, problems we have at the workplace, is that politics is so tied in with everything, with the economy, and by definition that is, you know, fascism. It's moving towards fascism.
Mm-hmm.
So
we were going to try to give an example of the iteration process that substitutes for a market. And I was starting to say that I plan out my budget for a year, mm-hmm, based on what I think that I deserve coming from the economy. And I base that generally on how much I plan on working. So in a sense, I've already talked to my work council a little bit to say whether we all want to work more next year or not, but we're not exactly sure exactly how much that is going to be yet.
And it depends on the consumers' council, the different councils coming in and you know, reviewing the demands from the consumer councils or the requests.
Right. So I, me and my family, decide that we need a couple new bicycles, because the old ones, the kids have outgrown them, and we need clothes about the same as last year. Let's say we want to take a vacation this year, and so we put all this into a proposal, and we give it to the consumer council that we're most closely related to, which would be possibly a neighborhood consumer council. And they sum those together of all their memberships and try to come up with an average, or not an average, but a total. Yeah. And they push that up further into different levels of consumer councils.
Yeah, seeing other people in the council or representatives in the council and, mm-hmm. and see which things match, you know, how many other people want bicycles or whatever.
Right. And then at we see. At a certain time, and it's not written in stone, it becomes a logical point probably where it's set, where you say, well, this is a group of a logical number to deal with of bicycles and shirts and food, and that proposal that's summed together by the consumer councils gets handed to the workers' council.
Well, the facilitation board first, right? It would go through them to get it to the appropriate workers' councils.
Right. So you yourself as a consumer don't have to go out and find who has the beans you want.
Yeah, or bicycles.
You can rely on a facilitation board to find the people who are willing to produce the things for you. So what do the workers' councils then do with that information, those proposals from the consumers?
Well, then they would, you know, take that in and see if it works for them, if the workers' councils agree, you know, or can work it out to make that number of goods, you know, that can do an order of 50 bicycles with whatever materials that they have. And if they can't, then they adjust the what they can do and send that back too, right?
Mm-hmm. So you're saying they also make a counter proposal.
Uh-huh.
That maybe on the first time around, what the workers want to produce and the consumers want to consume may not match up exactly the first time, and so these different proposals have to be negotiated.
Mm-hmm.
And the facilitation board helps to do that?
Yeah, it helps to do that. And there's also the question of say, you know, the bicycle factory doesn't want to make too many bicycles, you know, so they use information from the consumers' councils through the facilitation board to see how many bicycles are needed in like an entire region or something.
Mm-hmm.
And if they already have too many, then maybe they can that information can go through to other consumer councils,
right?
You know, that maybe would need bicycles, and so it would go back and forth like that, you know, maybe three or four times until, you know, the agreement is reached, mm-hmm. and, you know, the price is also adjusted during this process.
Right. I think we can talk a little bit more about the prices, but we have a telephone call, two of them lined up here. The first one is Quip.
Quip.
Good evening, Quip. Your question or comment about Pericon.
Quip, are you there?
We seem to have lost Quip.
Sorry, Quip, you should call back.
We're going to go to the next caller, who is Frank.
Hello.
Hello, Frank.
Hi, Frank.
I'm really interested in your program.
Thank you.
It's a bit complicated, but it sounds like a possible framework for a society and ideas for how to run a decent and fair society. Only thing you haven't addressed, as far as I can see, is how we get from here to there. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there have been all kinds of ideas that are rather similar to what you're advocating and what you're putting forth now. But the real problem isn't how we'll run the new society. The real problem is how are we going to get these parasites who own the society to let go and let us take it over and run it for the benefit of everybody.
Well, I think you hit it.
Have you got any ideas about that?
Yeah,
are you going to
organize
a political party, or what are you going to do?
Well, yeah, that's a very good point. Definitely not a political party in my mind, but I think that, for one, some of these workplaces already exist. Like I mentioned, the co-ops, and I think that it's an important thing for people to learn more about them, educate themselves on it, get involved with them, you know, become part of a co-op, you know, look into different ways of, you know, like there's a food buying club here in Grand Rapids, you know, and then also people just going, you know, talking with their coworkers and making alliances with their coworkers about like their same interests and starting their own workers' council. And it can be done in any workplace.
But don't you think that you need a whole economy? You know, to build a little island of Paracon in the midst of a capitalist system that could stamp it out with one kick of its foot.
No, it wouldn't be a little island.
Paracon, I would think capitalist class would regard Paracon as a danger, and rightly.
Yeah.
A danger to their continued existence. So.
Well, I think
you have to establish it as a small scale in the middle of a enormous capitalist economy in which you're at the mercy of all branches of capital, whether it's energy or whatever.
That's a good point. So, therefore, it would have to be just as widespread and just as, you know, diverse as far as the goods and services as you know, capitalism is, but in the sense, what I mean in the sense is that it wouldn't be just a little island. It would be, you know, thousands or millions of little islands, and then networking,
right?
You know, between all those and having them all grow at once.
I think that we've had some experience on the co-ops with the co-ops on the production side of workplaces, mm-hmm. making these councils, co-ops. Collectively deciding how they're going to run themselves. On the consumer side is where there's been some lack. Once neighborhoods start to see that it's in their interest to work collectively and put in these orders with the co-ops and build the networks that way, then they can figure out how to go through the negotiating process. The problem right now with co-ops is as you said, they're stuck in the middle of a capitalist system, and on the inside they behave living up to these values, but as soon as they go outside of their doors, they're forced to sink or swim in this greedy
market
system.
Like everybody else.
There are some political things. I don't think that a political party is really going to do it, but there, personally, I think the battle to remove corporate personhood would go a tremendous long way to getting a Paracon, or even if it's not Paracon, a more just economic system, to get this crazy idea that corporations are private people who have the constitutional protection of free speech, of freedom from search and seizure. No, corporations should be completely search and seize.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to go into any of these dastardly businesses and find out what they're really doing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's our imperative, our right and our duty as citizens of the United States to demand that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would go a long way to solving our problems in the economy and also moving towards a Paracon.
Yeah, and also on the same token, ending corporate welfare too, because it's our tax dollars going to bail out corporations and stuff that, mm-hmm. you know, like you said, that are considered individuals and have these constitutional rights. So.
Right.
There's one thing that I wanted to say about the the consumer councils. I think one way that's already happening of steps from here to there is neighborhood associations are fairly close to it. You know, people that live in, you know, one area can get involved with a neighborhood association.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is though, I mean, the way they are now, they generally get funds from, you know, the centralized state or from the federal government or whatever. So, you know, that would be different somewhat in
America. And their focus is generally not on an economic, you know, they're more about keeping the streets clean or
working on projects or development or whatever.
Right, but not necessarily buying goods that the community is going to consume.
But it's closer to that, though.
Mm-hmm. It's a good point. So
good talking to you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Frank.
Thanks, mm-hmm. Frank. And we're about two-thirds of the way through the show. We're going to go to our sponsor here.
Yeah, message from our corporate sponsor.
Yeah.
Nike.
McDonald's. Go. Hey, welcome back. Nothing to buy from those commercials. So before that break, we were talking about how the iteration process worked, of how we come to an agreement of how goods and services are distributed. Obviously, it's not a free-for-all. We're not talking a pipe dream. If you remember from the first episode of John Sinclair saying, everybody should just take what they want and everybody should volunteer, and somehow that would all work out. Well, we're not on that trip because we don't think that it would work out.
Mm-hmm.
Things would just not match up. What I want would not be necessarily provided by some other people unless we start to talk about it. And we were going through an example of how the iteration is really a negotiation,
mm-hmm.
and we work out and we change our desires, or maybe not our desires, but what we expect the economy to provide us based on how much we're willing to put in and what other people are willing to do in a non-coercive fashion. And through that iteration, we mentioned that there are prices, we call them indicative prices, and they're meant to
like reflect the true cost.
Right. Reflect the cost and the benefits also. So if people think that something is beneficial to the society as a whole and want to see more of it consumed, then the price of that will go down through this process of negotiation.
And also things that are polluting or dangerous to society and stuff would cost more eventually, and maybe, you know, harder to get too. I think naturally it would work out that way, to where, you know, especially the polluting aspect, because the cost of, like, say, environmental cleanup from a factory or from nuclear waste would be factored in, because that, you know, the workers' council from the environmental cleanup people would also be part of the negotiation process of, you know, how, if this particular thing is available or how much it costs or whatever.
Right. Could we have the phone number up on the screen again? We are a live call-in show. The number is 459-4881, and we'd love to hear from you with questions about how PERICON works. One thing I think would be good to do at this time would be just to, before we go into talking about some resources that you can go to at home, to see if we've really accomplished what in the first show we set out to do. We laid out values, four values, solidarity, diversity, equity, and self-management, and just to review whether these institutions that we've mentioned of councils and indicative prices and facilitation board really live up to these standards, or whether there's some hidden gotcha in there that, you know, well, geez, we don't manage ourselves, or it's not solidaritous, we'll end up at each other's throats in this system, and therefore it's a bad system and we should reject it.
Yeah, and that's what happens, well, this is something similar in workplaces today with this whole teamwork idea, is that they try and you know, say that a workplace has these values, they're trying to live up to these values, but in reality it's just a sham, you know, it's not really doing that. It's in the interest of profits, you know, because these are people-centered values, equity, solidarity, diversity, and self-management.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't really exist in the structure now, I mean, as far as, you know, because it's the interest of making profits. So.
Right, and competition, yeah, self-interest. Strict self-interest, not together, no solidarity. Mm-hmm. We do have a call. Ed is on the line. Thanks for your call, Ed.
Yeah. Hi, John. When I hear you talk about Paracon in a more general sense, I sort of feel like it's a group of planners is laying out heaven. And when you begin to mention just the number of the concrete issues, I know you mentioned corporate personhood, whereby corporations have the rights of human beings in our legal system, which mm-hmm. is a problem. We can go back to our history when corporations were given charters based upon doing public good. They did not have an inalienable right to resist. And Matt referred to corporate welfare, and we could deal when you get to the concrete issues that plague the society, or the question of corporate, not welfare, but wealth and its corruption of our political system, for example, immediately you resonate well, because there are many people, literally millions, who've never heard of Paracon, who would say, yeah, right on. But when you start talking about your utopian ideal, and I have a sense that it can become very sectarian, in the sense that it's in the book, this is what Paracon is, and this is it. But there are many, many varieties of liberal leftist thought, critiques of capitalism. John, you did acknowledge the fact that socialists, for example, would be more open to Paracon because they already have a critique of capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see this having the capacity of becoming a wide-scale movement, because it sounds very sectarian. It has this kind of narrow focus a particular set of concepts given new names, but that have been around a long time, as if it's something unique and different from everything else. And really, I'm not sure. I would look at this as just simply a variety of socialism, and there are many varieties of it. But that was my comment. When you get down to the concrete issues of the real problems, the fundamental problems in this society and the system, you reach a much wider audience. Otherwise, you sound like you're arguing how many angels can sit on the head of a pin.
Paracon is meant to be an overarching sort of structure, though, too, you know, where there's room for improvement, and it will constantly be evolving as it goes, mm-hmm. right? So there would be, you know, room for the workers' councils to, you know, change things so that it would work better for them, you know. It's not just going to be one thing set in stone, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that your point that complaints are resonate with a lot of people, and solutions, especially if they're new and unfamiliar, don't resonate. Well, that's a natural human response, that people aren't going to jump to embrace an idea generally when they're first introduced to it, and that's totally natural. Our point here is to get the idea out there that this is a solution, and get past the complaining stage mm-hmm. of saying, oh, capitalism is bad, and tweaking around the edges, and oh, we got to hire or vote in somebody else who has a better viewpoint of what capitalism could be. Well, no, let's get right down to a basic critique of capitalism and get rid of it and replace it with something better. And this is one idea that we think is a much better idea than capitalism, and better than socialism as it has been practiced the past.
And also, people are going to have to be involved. You know, this isn't like a spectator sport, you know, whereas mm-hmm. in our society now, it's actually makes people profits for, you know, society just to sit back and consume and absorb and not be involved. You know, participatory economics is saying that, you know, people will have to work to formulate the economy, and be involved. So that's another point, too. Did you have anything else, Ed?
He's off the line.
Off the line? Okay. Thanks for calling, Ed.
We're down to the last 5 minutes here, and I thought it would be a good idea to get out some examples that are working of Pericon.
Definitely.
And then some resources that you at home can get to do more further research, because it is a little bit complex. It's new. If you're not, if you don't have a critique of capitalism already, you might have to study a little bit, and it takes a little bit of work. You know, nothing to fear from that. You know, but some examples of things that are currently using Pericon. One is South End Press. They've been around for 25 years. They utilize balanced job complexes and approaches its editorial and other publishing-related decisions as much in accord with Pericon values and aims as conditions permit. Tau Communications, they're a federation of computer internet service providers. Matthew has his email address through Tau, and they're incorporating balanced job complexes and participatory economics. Up in Canada, the Mondragon Bookstore and Coffee House uses job complexes and job types that strike a creative balance between, or a balance between creative and empowering types of work on one hand and more rote and menial tasks on the other, because in a coffee house, the dish has to be washed, but also, the books have to be done, and so one person can do the books and wash the dishes. That's a basic idea of balanced job complexes. The G7 Welcoming Committee Record Company, I love that title. They make punk music. I've heard some of their songs on the internet. They have a humane and ethical workplace through participatory economic principles. Arbiter Ring Publishing. They published the book that's underneath the magazine there, that one. Another publishing house. And then ZNet and Z Magazine. Here's the brand new issue I just got in the mail. It looks terrible on television. It's all washed out, but it's a long-running magazine edited by Michael Albert. And then we had mentioned co-ops, housing, food, printing services, farms, work exchange programs.
There's a lot of those up there.
These are all things that move towards Pericon. We've got the, actually that web address is wrong. It's www.pericon.org, not com, O-R-G. If you could change that on the screen, please. If you go there, it's a wonderful website. It's got lots of information. It's got a step-by-step instructional on what we've been going through over the last couple shows. It's got a FAQ of frequently answered questions or asked questions and answers. It's got articles. It's got debates. It's got audio that you can listen to, you know, real audio or MP3 of presentations that different Periconists have given to different groups. A really good resource. So I highly recommend. I've learned so much from that website. It's just a wonderful website.
I'd like to direct people, if I may, too, to the Tau website. I don't know if we have a graphic for it, but www.tao.ca, which is Tau Communications, what you mentioned before. Right. And there's a lot of links on there, too. And, you know, they have encrypted email services. And what's interesting about them is that they have a work exchange program. So it's set up like Pericon, where you can get free access and become part of Tau by doing work for them, you know, so it's a direct exchange.
Okay. And then the last thing I wanted to do, we're down to the last minute, is just put off some book titles. Hopefully the music's not going, you can hear me. The Political Economy of Participatory Economics by Michael Albert and Robin Hanel, Princeton University Press, 1991. Looking Forward, Participatory Economics for the 21st Century. That's complete online at pericon.org. That entire book is free. A new book, The ABCs of Political Economy. I haven't read it yet, by Robin Hanel. It's just out. And there's also a episode video series that you can get. Well, I hope this has all been very helpful for you.